an orgasm. But I gotta do it because mom bra. P.S. Never eat salad at my fucking house. 5. Push-ups, kegels, yoga stretches. I try not to have sex on the first date if I can help it. When I was younger, there wouldn't be these epic lapses between sexual encounters, but considering that I am currently in month 6 of a vaginal drought, nowadays I have to get myself back into fighting shape when faced with the possibility of some brand new sex. The first time is always the worst time, because even if you are both just totally fucking dying to get your tongues on each other, shit is always going to be a little awkward. There's going to be some fumbling, some kissing too hard or not hard enough, some offbeat sex rhythm, some mismatching of your body's puzzle pieces. But that's the buttery shit about getting to bang someone new, right? The teaching someone new what you like and how you like it. The discovery of someone else's erogenous zones. The masking of your horror when you find out this motherfucker is into that crazy ass shit you read about on the internet. Here's what sucks, though. For a generally out of shape person, I like to be in decent sex shape. And sitting around drinking my feelings, emotions are just chemicals, for 6 months isn't necessarily the best way. All my banging muscles have atrophied, bro. My legs can't spread that wide. My side cramps if I have to stay in this position too long. What the fuck are you trying to do with my knees? So, to save myself some unnecessary embarrassment, I came up with the following lazy, sex-specific workout program. 1. Give better hand jobs. I keep a set of 12-pound dumbbells in my hall closet. After a good first date, I start doing biceps curls and triceps extensions while I watch television or talk on the phone. In anticipation of the day, I'm going to have to hold this meaty pre-corpse up during some butt sex. Then when I'm tired, I lie on my back and do presses with them to strengthen my pectorals. I also stretch my wrists a lot. And I drink water, because sweating through an hour of Top Model Cycle 172 while working out your shoulder muscles is exhausting. Also, health. 2. Try not to pee. This one is good for the bus stop or train platform, especially early in the morning after you've had your coffee. Get up, do your morning ritual, pee in the shower or wherever, eat your Bran O's or your Flax Chex or whatever fiber-rich cereal your physician guilted you into eating, and your coffee or juice or double whiskey neat with a water back and beer chaser. Get dressed, begin commute. Halfway to the train, you're probably going to have to pee. Shit, too, depending on your constitution. Now hold your lady muscles taut, and don't ruin those leggings you're trying to pass off as pants. That's right, squeeze. Keep squeezing, even as that old lady with the collapsible shopping cart refuses to collapse that goddamn shopping cart and so instead jabs you in the thigh with it. Keep squeezing, despite the fact that those teenagers are actively waving guns around your head and listening to their music out loud, even though you can fucking see the headphones draped around their necks. Keep squeezing, even though that woman from HR that you hate ties up the bathroom for 20 minutes at the start of every workday. 3 days of that, and you'll be able to circumcise a dude all by yourself, without a scalpel. 3. Fatnastics. My Achilles tendons are the worst. A few years ago, I busted my foot running through Edgewater at 2 in the morning on a Sunday, wearing flip-flops and club clothes, and these shits ain't been right ever since. I have flat feet and heel spurs, and I already told you how I feel about pedicures, bro. But I can't be getting leg and feet cramps in the middle of the coitus. It's happened, and every time I have to push some mouth-breathing Neanderthal off me to hobble painfully to the kitchen in hopes of scoring a still ripe banana. I nearly die of embarrassment in the process. So rather than suffer through that nightmare, I instead implement a succession of calf and thigh and foot stretches into my daily routine. Since it isn't real, I can't describe the shit, but just imagine a lot of awkward toe touching and foot flexing until the cat starts making me uncomfortable with her snickering. Ready, set, gross and awkward and humiliating even though I try to prep for it. Fuck. Massive wet asses. All I ever want to know about is how other people have sex. I'm so nosy and gross. I want to know exactly what they do, how long they kiss for, if he has to beg her to go down on him, the whole thing. Who initiates it? Has she ever accidentally peed in his mouth? Does he let her stick a finger in his asshole? When I meet a couple, first, I admire their handsome outerwear. I mean, right? Isn't that how you do it when you're angling to make a good impression? And then I wonder, like, if he has to ask her permission before he rolls over onto her in the middle of the night. You know, how does the sex bargaining work? Does he do that cuddle, cuddle, spooning, whoa, I have an erection, sneak attack? Or does he just compliment the shit out of that broad until her panties fucking simply evaporate? Which of these gentlemen is the top? Are these girls into tribbing? Which one does the penis stuff? It's not even really that perverted. I have a genuine intellectual curiosity about how other people get down. I have never been banging anyone long and or consistently enough to create a pattern. Chicken wings on Tuesday, sex on Wednesday, American Idol on Thursday, take the dry cleaning Friday, blowjob Saturday, etc. All my boyfriends have been once a week dinner and drinks, maybe a movie, spend the night at his place kind of boyfriends. I'd have no idea what on earth to do if I slept next to the same warm body for more than 3 nights in a row. That is literally something that has never happened to me. And I'm 32 years old. All you jerks complaining on Facebook that your boyfriend of 5 years forgot to take the garbage out one fucking time, and I haven't even spent a Memorial Day weekend with a dude? Shut the fuck up and die, please. Anyway, this is the type of thing that consumes me. This wondering if people have a code word, or gesture, or something that says, tonight, my love, I'm going to put it in your butthole. It will be spectacular. You will thoroughly enjoy it. When all of your relationships are over, before anyone has had a birthday, or any major holidays have occurred, bitches ain't really gotta worry about the whole asking for sex part. It is assumed, naturally, that since I haven't seen you in 2 weeks, and you sent a sort of ambivalent, mean-ass text yesterday, and I ordered and drank an entire bottle of French wine at dinner, that once we get back to my place, I expect you to eat me out while pretending to like it, while I pretend you are good at it. And then I will jack you off. Probably get a leg cramp. Try not to fart on your nuts because I ate all that cheese at the restaurant. Use my Lilo on the toilet after you pass out because you're a total dick who doesn't give a shit about my sexual needs. And then, after tiptoeing back into the bathroom in an attempt not to wake you up, I will try to sleep with that painful mattress seam digging into my soft meat and the side of my face because I'm not strong enough to haul your sleeping carcass off my side of the goddamn bed. Can't we just make holding hands while partially clothed a real motherfucking thing? Is mutual masturbation really so terrible? Because actual human sex is sometimes the goddamn worst. The first pornographic film I ever purchased was a towering cinematic achievement entitled Massive Wet Asses. The year was 2006, and I was 25 years old. An avid masturbator, I had grown bored with my imagination's ability to come up with new ways for Tom Cruise and Method Man to fuck me, so I went to the porn store. Tucked neatly into the small but decently appointed black-on-black category within Cupid's Treasures hardcore DVD section, this visual masterpiece not only bore a cover with images that looked like stills from a low-budget rap video, buff, shirtless gentlemen, heavily laden with platinum rope chains, ample-bottomed, scantily clad women whose glistening haunches appear to have been coated liberally with Italian salad dressing, but also promised an action-packed 90 minutes full of, quote, fine-ass sluts with massive wet butts, end quote, and, quote, fat-ass chicks hungry for big, thick dicks, end quote. I felt a little guilty that it was only going to cost me $29.99. That much, quote, monster cock slipping and sliding on a massive ride, end quote, was easily worth twice the asking price. Current retail price? $3.85, expedited shipping available. I also bought my very first vibrator that day, a nondescript lavender sheath that had three settings and required 2D batteries. Batteries that, quel surprise, could be purchased for nearly twice what I would have paid for them at Walgreens behind the counter during checkout. One-stop dick shop. Of course I had seen dirty movies before, but we're talking the basics, at best. Elementary-level solo sex material. Friday night premium cable softcore, teeming with waxed Barbie dolls in their synthetic blonde hair, built like broomsticks with water balloons affixed to their chests. I figured if that's what I had to look like in order for a man to get an erection in my presence, then I was never, ever, ever going to have sex in my whole fucking life. It was too depressing to even masturbate to, so I'd just put my headphones on and do my geography homework while watching Emmanuel. One of the vaginas in my house had hidden a couple of issues of Playgirl in her room, but a fruity photo spread of a naked dude reclining on a table littered with rose petals and lit candles with his genitals wrapped around the deed to a house in the suburbs wasn't really my style. And left to its own devices, my sluggish fantasy brain is totally lazy and downright unimaginative when it comes to providing suitable autoerotic mental stimulation, recycling variations on the same two themes. Clean-shaven, broad-shouldered men in sharply cut suits paying for a steak dinner in a fancy restaurant with their credit cards and not expecting a blowjob in return, or heavily bearded, broad-shouldered men slaughtering bison with their bare hands before butchering it and bringing it home, cooking it in butter, and serving it to me in bed without expecting anal sex as payment. My brain is apparently singularly focused on dinner and possibly anal sex. On the train ride home, I was 100% convinced that everyone knew the opaque black bag shoved in the pocket of my hoodie had come from the sex store, and it made me feel sexy in a perverted, creepy way. My roommate at the time had left town for the weekend, and I'm pretty sure I stopped at Dinkle's to get a box of cupcakes before ordering a pizza when I got home, and that I spent the entirety of that weekend without any pants on, vanilla cake crumbs scattered between my sweaty sheets. Sure, I'd had plenty of sex by that point, but what the fuck is sex when you're 22, other than mindless bouncing up and down on top of, or sliding awkwardly back and forth beneath, an inarticulate Neanderthal who has no idea about clitoral stimulation. Besides, I was more interested in things like making my phone ring. Gosh, it was of such crucial importance to me to have a man actually pick up the phone and dial my number back then, even if he didn't really say anything interesting once I'd answered. And having someone around to shave my legs for, because, to this day, I don't unless I'm guaranteed someone handsome is going to see them. Masturbating heretofore had involved so many minutes of intense concentration on both the fantasy in my head and whatever my hand was doing, and that shit would sometimes take a goddamn half an hour. Really, bitches, who has that kind of time? Plus, it makes my hand joints sore. Right now, I probably have 6,297,431 worth of vibrators in my pajama drawer. No more $15 plastic dicks. These days I have a collection of fancy silicone Lilos and Jimmy Janes and fun factories that are curved for the G-spot and flared for the butthole and waterproof for the bathroom. I work 50 hours a week, dude. I can't stagger through the door after a bone-crushing day and lube up my fingers while imagining John Hamm's voice in my ear for 45 minutes. I want to slip my extase liberté in while eating my dinner over the kitchen sink and looking at pictures of dudes kissing on my phone, have an orgasm, wash my plate, maybe I'll do it tomorrow, then take my ass to bed. Porn pretty much saved my life. Finally, there was this magical celluloid place into which I could escape and watch other people fucking like wild animals and spitting on each other and eating out each other's asses and, with the help of that cheap piece of plastic that rattled like a lawnmower, in approximately 35 seconds my entire worldview would be completely changed. I'd go from a bad day to a good one, from feeling terrible about myself to thinking I was totally fucking sexy and desirable. I didn't ever stop. I just couldn't. And you better be glad I didn't, because eventually I would have opened fire in a grocery store or some shit. You're alive today because I learned how to reach my own G-spot while watching a woman get pissed on for rent money. And, thanks to massive wet asses in particular, I understood that this wagon I'm dragging isn't something to be ashamed of. This massive dry ass is actually appealing to a small subset of grown men who live at home with their cuckold mothers and also are recent parolees. And porn continues to be a savior for my weary vagina. I know some women have a problem with a dude beating off to cream pies on the internets all day, but girl, that's just you. Here's the thing about porn, computer or otherwise. If a dude expected me to have sex with him as often as he would like to have sex with me, taking into consideration the fountain of smoldering desire that represents, of course, or as often as he thinks about having sex with passersby on the street, or as often as he urinates and the handling of his dick reminds him of sex, or as often as a strong gust of wind grazes his cock and reminds him just how much he loves sex, my vagina would be nothing more than a swollen mound of bruised, rancid hamburger meat beaten bloody and raw by the incessant rabbit fucking of a dude who has reduced my importance in his life to that of a talking blow-up doll. I'd become nothing more than a collection of orifices into which he might repeatedly jab his erection. And, considering the conversational skills of the average adult male, that might be preferable to actually letting one talk to me about things he thinks are important. Except, I have to go to work and shit. And rather than try to explain to my boss that I'm wearing a head bandage today because my man friend ear-fucked the shit out of me last night, why not just let that guy beat off to 10-ish lusty minutes of some hot broad on a Sibian? I have stuff to do, man. And, since I know you are wondering, this is how I have sex. 1. By this point of the whole operation, I'm usually pretty tired. Not gonna lie, I'm usually hoping dude has fallen asleep on the couch after waiting for 20 minutes while I washed my asshole in his sink. But if he's still awake, I will rally. I mean, if I have to. Some of these jerks won't just settle for a goddamn blowjob. 2. I like to talk to my partner about sex like I'm closing a business deal. Super formal, lots of fine print, the mentioning of synergy, and a firm handshake. I negotiate the leaving on of as many of my clothes as possible. Really, dude, I fuck better with a t-shirt on. And set a timer. 15 minutes, then we are watching The Voice. Do we understand each other? Then the intercourse begins. You may enter me. Usually they just stand there dumbfounded, satisfied to sign whatever contract placed in front of them, provided that my pants are still coming off. 3. Oh snap, foreplay. Ladies will be mad as hell if I don't list the one reason we even RSVP'd to the pussy party. I don't know how the rest of you assholes get down, but for me, foreplay consists of standing outside, waiting for the bed to be strewn with rose petals as the string quartet warms up. I like to be blindfolded and gently guided into the boudoir, then nestled into silk pillows just as a choir of angels descends from the heavens, sweetly singing my name. Just kidding, bitch. I, like the rest of you, very much enjoy standing awkwardly in the corner of an unfamiliar bedroom, hoping that something darker than pitch black will be invented in the time it takes me to get my jeans unzipped and down around my ankles. I also appreciate the delicate art of trying to kiss someone with my mouth open without disgustingly licking the inside of his nostril while trying to get all four clasps on my industrial-strength bra undone at the same time. Then I gotta massage those shoulder grooves caused by my huge tits for a second, trying to smooth that shit out before dude notices that they are deep enough to swim in. Rush through some sort of hand, blow, or foot job activity so that I can get to the part where having a blanket over me doesn't seem out of place. 4. Stick a finger up my birth canal to make sure I won't get rug burn when this insensitive asshole starts jackhammering my chocha. 5. Under the covers, talking dirty, making uncomfortable jokes to deflect from my body hatred, pretending to know what tightening my kegel muscles means, and trying to do whatever the fuck that is. Put your finger right there for 3 minutes while biting me over here. No, a little faster. Please, a little harder. Keep the pressure right there. Wait. Don't stop. 2 more seconds. Okay. Done. Good night. 6. Or sometimes I like to scroll through Tumblr girl-on-girl porn on my phone with my hand in my pants while dude plays Madden NFL 13. Trust me, just as good. Part 3. Dinner on the couch. When someone is coming over, read, when I'm sitting at home alone but want to pretend I care about myself, the first thing I like to do is light a coffee-scented candle, so that at the very least, there is the illusion of warmth and food. I never got into coffee for the same reasons I never really got into wine. It seems unnecessarily fussy and complicated. Getting good at it feels cost-prohibitive, and the results are fair to middling at best. I enjoy that thick, warm sleepiness that rapidly pouring a liter of wine into an empty stomach provides as much as anyone. But it feels just as good when that wine costs $6 as it does when the wine costs $14 or $27, as much as a meal at a decent restaurant or as much as my gas bill in the winter months. The candle makes things cozy, and that special food issue of kinfolk casually tossed on the floor at the foot of the bed shows that I care about food, but I don't care about it. I had dinner with some friends the other night, and these friends are like lawyers and professors I met late enough in life that they've never had to borrow $5 from me or sleep on my couch for a week. and one of them ordered wine by the region, and upon first sip pronounced it complex and multidimensional. And here is my fucking train of thought while those words were coming out of her mouth as I silently drained my cheapest gin you got over ice with a splash of diet tonic. Is she talking about the wine? Could I have been chewing the last piece of sourdough in the breadbasket so loudly that I missed the change of conversation? What, does this wine read the Sunday paper and refer to movies as films? I have no idea where wine even comes from. Do you have to take some kind of wine class in finishing school? What would that sentence sound like if I said it? And could I say it without laughing? I wish wine tasted more like grape juice. I am too stupid to be at this dinner. Ha ha, I'm pretty funny. That films line was a good one. And then the food came out, and there were sauce dots and spit foams, and my fraudulent ass was sitting there wondering what the rules are about asking a cab driver to hit the drive-through. I don't care what makes anyone happy. I enjoy watching Triple H's WWE entrance montages on YouTube. I mean, what authority do I have to criticize anyone's choices ever? But I literally have no idea what to do when I'm served part of my dinner balanced precariously on a spoon, and that ounce of squid toast costs as much as a night at the movies. That is money that could have been better spent on a vanilla diffuser to trick anyone who stops by that I might be baking when really I haven't bought eggs in more than 6 months. How I like to eat pasta when I am just chilling by myself. Ingredients: a box of whatever pasta shape you enjoy. 1 pint of grape tomatoes. I hate big, mealy tomatoes. Ugh. Olive oil. A tube of minced garlic in the produce section, dried basil, dried oregano, crushed red pepper, sea salt, and fresh black pepper. I'm just trying to be cute. You can use regular pepper, duh. Shaved Parmesan. This makes a difference. Trust. Listen, you've probably already heard this story, but I don't care. I'm telling it again. I once dated a grown man with a college degree who told me that he only ate angel hair pasta. And I'm no snob. I mean, shit, I eat microwave pizza rolls. But this gentleman was turning down a home-cooked meal because he either, one, did not approve of the shape of my pasta, or two, did not understand that no matter how it looks, it is all eggs and semolina. I stood in my kitchen, glasses fogged by the steam wafting up from the walnut pesto bowtie pasta I wasted an afternoon to prepare, only to have my offering rejected by a talking grizzly bear in overpriced athletic footwear. Anyway, I like to make this with slightly undercooked spaghetti, but you do what feels good to you. 1. Boil some salted water. Then cook the pasta however long the box says. I like to shave a minute or two off the cooking time, depending on the pasta type, and immediately rinse it in cold water because gooey, sticky pasta makes me want to die. 2. Heat up a little drizzle or two of the olive oil in a saucepan on medium heat, then squeeze in however much garlic suits you. I like a tablespoon or more, but I'm gross. 3. At some point before now, you should have cut all the grape tomatoes in half the long way. If not, take the garlic and oil off the stove and slice the tomatoes. Dump them into the warm garlic slurry and keep the heat on medium high, stirring with a wooden spoon and kinda gently mashing them so their liquidy insides glug out. 4. This doesn't sound appealing, I know, but it'll get all fragrant and saucy and you won't be grossed out. Add a pinch of basil and a pinch of oregano, like a literal pinch of each. Then shake some crushed red pepper in there and a couple of pinches of salt and a few grinds of pepper. Taste it before going too ham with the spices, okay? You know how salty you like things. You don't need me to tell you to start with an eighth of a teaspoon of salt at a time and keep adding until you get it where you want it. You're a grown-up. You know how to salt. 5, but in case you don't, an eighth is as good a place as any to start. 6, this should be a quick process. I mean, the point of getting in bed at 7 p.m. with a bowl of food is that you don't want to labor over it all goddamn night. You want to walk in the door, pull your bra off through your shirt sleeve in one swift motion, and be eating while bathed in the phosphorescent blue glow of the television half an hour later, maximum. Sometimes I order delivery before I even finish working so that my lambiryani gets to my door at the same time I do, and I can start ripping pieces off the garlic naan as soon as the elevator door shuts. So heap a pile of your cooked pasta into the biggest bowl you own, spoon enough of the hot tomato mixture over it to lightly coat it, toss, then sprinkle it with shaved Parmesan. 6.5. That powdery Parmesan in a can is fine if that's what you're into, but not here. This doesn't taste good covered in cheese dust. You want to swirl your noodles in spicy tomato oil, then stab into a sheet of salty, tangy Parmesan, and then load it into your face. Not choke on a cloud of cheese-scented sawdust. A case can be made for grated Parmesan, but really, just get the shaved kind. It's so good, and it makes you look very fancy. And here's a thing you can do with whatever is left over, and you want to pretend that you are craving a salad, when actually you just want to eat some cheese. Mix a few tablespoons of olive oil with the juice of a lemon and some lemon zest. Grind some salt and pepper into it, then toss in a few handfuls of watercress or baby spinach. Serve topped with shaved Parmesan. Pat yourself on the back for being so responsible while dousing much-needed nutrients in artery-clogging oil and cheese. Sometimes I just want a big bowl of something to hug against my chest as I cry into it. Cereal is a no because even if I use almond or coconut milk, fiber is an unpredictable assailant against my digestive system, and I don't want to wake myself up farting. Speaking of, I love a good chili, but as much as I hate Earth, I suspect my landlord doesn't actually recycle, and all those bean cans going in the real trash fills me with insurmountable guilt. But then again, it's not like I'm going to ever soak my own dry beans or can a bushel of San Marzanos. Do tomatoes come in a bushel? And do I feel bad enough about landfills to start? The real question is, why is living so hard? Why am I up at night, haunted by that moisturizer jar I realized was made of number 7 plastic and can't be recycled after I went to the trouble of rinsing it out? I don't own Walmart. I don't make batteries. Why am I trying to slice my wrist open with the sharpened edge of a non-recyclable frozen low-calorie pizza box when I am just one person with a below-average amount of trash? Anyway, a delicious soup. A delicious soup. Ingredients. 1 yellow onion, sliced from top to bottom so you get beautiful half-moon slivers. 2 red peppers, cored and seeded, cut into thick strips. 2 tablespoons butter. 3 teaspoons minced garlic from a jar. 2 teaspoons paprika. 2 tablespoons tomato paste from a tube. It's easier. 1 28-ounce can diced tomatoes. 1 can veggie broth, 1 teaspoon sugar, salt and pepper, 2 teaspoons-ish of dried basil, heavy cream to taste, 1 bag garlic croutons from the store, because we are never going to be the type of people to make our own croutons. Are you nuts? 1. Cut the top and the bottom off the onion. Hold it down. Then take a paring knife and slice from top to bottom while rotating it on a cutting board. I don't know shit about measurements because I went to school in America, but try to keep the cuts a quarter inch apart. Or an eighth inch, maybe? I'm not going to dig around for a ruler, but you get what I'm saying. Thin, but not too thin, crescent moons. Then slice the peppers into thick strips. Cook the onions and peppers in melted butter for 8 to 10 minutes, stirring every once in a while until they're all slick and shiny. 2, add the garlic. Now, I haven't minced a clove of garlic since 2003. I don't like peeling that tissue skin off it and inevitably puncturing it with my nail, only to have garlic juice seep directly into my bloodstream through my pores and leave me stinking for the next 2 weeks, no matter how many times I wash. So I buy the kind in the jar, without shame. Don't let some asshole trick you into feeling bad about your pre-chopped garlic mush. There's no sous chef on the other side of the kitchen dicing shit up for you. This ain't Top Chef. 3. Immediately add the paprika and the tomato paste and stir for a couple of minutes. Then add the tomatoes, broth, sugar, and salt and pepper to taste. Then add a couple shakes or pinches of basil and mix it in. Then add a shake or pinch more if you can't see any flecks floating in it. That's how I judge food, by whether it looks like I've done anything. I got this recipe from the internet. Lest I fool you into believing I come from the kind of people who might pass down culinary traditions, attached to one of those articles that's like, warm soups for a cold, lonely night, you fucking spinster, or whatever. I love it. It's so easy, and it takes maybe 20 minutes start to finish, and when you inevitably slurp down the whole pot over the course of an episode of Grey's Anatomy, you can console yourself by thinking of all the lycopene and vitamin C, I guess, you ingested. 4. Bring the soup to a boil and then simmer it for a few minutes on medium heat while you try to remember where you stashed the croutons in the pantry. Locate them. Wrestle with the tamper-proof packaging until you give up and rip it open with your teeth. Then find your best bowl and wipe the ice cream residue out of it with a damp paper towel. Even though I know it's going to be too fucking hot, I can never resist sampling what I'm making and singeing my taste buds while I pretend I can tell whether a hot pot of molten lava requires more cumin. So try not to blister your tongue after you add however much cream you desire and test it to see if it's salty enough. 5. Ladle it into your bowl and then, if you're like me, dump in a handful of croutons and wait a few minutes for them to soften. The soup basically turns them into thick clumps of garlicky sponge, and if you let the croutons bloat up enough, you won't even have to chew. You can just sit there, intermittently sucking on your McSteamy bread and shouting mean things at Meredith. Forrest Whitaker's neck. A few months ago, I woke up one morning in bed with this dude with whom I was having the most frustrating and confusing non-relationship in the history of ever. And he rolled over and, apropos of nothing, said, "You have the tiniest nipples I have ever seen." Then he rolled over and started texting someone, probably a woman with a normal breast-to-nipple-to-areola ratio. Well, isn't that just exactly what I wanted to hear at 8 o'clock on a Monday morning while my chest was still clutched with the panic that I might have leaked leftover vaginal goo onto his crisp white sheets overnight? His tone wasn't necessarily negative, but it wasn't like he was fucking cooing over their minuscule adorableness either. It was, for all intents and purposes, a harmless observation. Let's pretend for a moment that that is a real thing that can happen. Okay, A harmless observation made while I was still vulnerable and naked and super self-conscious about maybe having grossly snored for 8+ hours next to a dude who just said he didn't want to be in a relationship with me. Why, thank you for noticing, kind sir. Aghast, I glance down at the crinkly chocolate chips at the bottoms because they point down, because they graze my ankles, because they get rug burns of my real woman tits in horror before snatching the sheet away from him and securing it snugly around my miniaturized shame, turning to face the wall and contemplate whether that observation was evidence of some sort of disappointment on his part. Yeah, totally weird, right? I managed feebly, then took back my mental apology for pretending he was someone else while he fucked me from behind. Has this motherfucker ever met a woman before? Has no one told him the lady body rules? Here is what you can say about a woman's body when she has clothes on. You look great in that. Or, wow, that fits perfectly. Or, damn, I can't wait to undress you. Or, no one can tell you bought that on sale. And here is what you can say about a woman's body when she has her clothes off. Absolutely nothing. Listen, homie, that thing you secretly hate about my body? Don't worry, I hate it too. With every fiber in my weird, fibrous breasts. And I'm the one who has to deal with its daily mockery. Every mark, every scar, every scratch, every flaw, I've seen it, documented it, cried over it, and tried to hide it. Would it kill you to pretend it isn't there? Or that, brace yourself, it might make me mysterious and sexy? That morning a couple of months ago, lying in bed with a dude who frequently insinuated that maybe I wasn't quite good enough for him, stark naked, and painfully self-conscious about my meat waddle and wrinkly areolas, I decided to write this list. My Physical Imperfections, a semi-comprehensive list by Samantha Irby, a fat person with visible varicose veins. Left foot, inordinately large big toe, peppered with a little sprinkling of coarse hair. Missing baby toenail. Mole between second and third toes, dark scar on instep from drunken flip-flop accident that resulted in broken foot in 2006, remaining toenails could stand to be trimmed. Right foot, large black circular scar from cutting open my toe while shaving it, the fucking horror. Giant crack on bottom of heel, yellow foot bottoms, weird raised vein on top. At the end of every sexual relationship, I never cry, because I save my tears for shit like dog food commercials and reality television singing competitions. But I always want to, because that dude seemed cool with all my weird moles and dark fleshy patches, and holy shit, I can never show this wretched body to anyone ever again. It's always that first shower after the breakup, when I'm lifting my tits up to rinse the crumbs from underneath, that it dawns on me that now I have to go out and find another person who won't balk at these flabby arms or whatever. That is terrifying. Just the thought, right now, sitting here at Kara's desk working on this essay, of having to introduce my jelly to a new person who is likely to scrutinize and reject it, makes me feel like an asshole. I just don't want to do that anymore. Can't we just lie fully clothed in bed together while holding hands and talking about how good pork belly tacos taste? I don't want to do the, I'm sorry, this is my disgusting body apology jig ever again. Nor will there ever be a time that the, just let me keep my shirt on waltz isn't utterly humiliating. Why must they always argue? Just let me keep this stupid long sleeve shirt on already. Left leg. Dark brown leather burn from fancy ass North Face boots 3 inches above ankle. dark red mark from ingrown hair on the upper inside chunk of calf, dark pinpoint scar from a mosquito bite I scratched the shit out of this summer, short rust-colored scratch on outside calf, giant circular pale bumpy keloid scar thing from a bike accident when I was 8, maybe? The bike flipped over and landed on top of me, and holy shit, this knee is where I landed. Several super gnarly-looking purple ingrown hair scars that serve as reasons 1 through 5, yes, there are 5 of them, why I'm never going to shave my pubic hair down to the wood ever fucking again. Dark brown inner thigh meat. Right leg. Long dog scratch that healed totally ugly. White dog puncture wound scar on lower shin. Raised cluster of purple veins on outer thigh. Dark scrape on knee. More dark red ingrown hair spots. No dick is worth this, I promise. Gross green veins. Shit, this leg has some leather burn too. Those boots are 3 years old. Old bug bite or zit or something that kind of looks like a herpes. I am covered in what my grandmother called chocolate sprinkles when I was too young to know what disgusting harbingers of cancerous doom meant, i.e., I am a moly motherfucker. You can dress it up and call them beauty marks if you want, but they are moles. And I have all the kinds. Flat scarlet ones, teeny raised dots, gnarly brown skin tags that actually get caught in shit like my zipper. You name the mole, I've got one somewhere. I have a giant black one in the crease where my right ass cheek connects to my thigh. And I'll just wait over here while you try to figure out how many dudes have asked, is that something I gotta worry about, while trying to fuck me in the ass? Here is what the women in my family happen to be blessed with. Giant asses, terrible vision, the worst teeth ever, weird, patchy, thinning hair, right at our rapidly graying hairlines, and a skin landscape dotted with thousands of moles. My grandmother's face looked like a giant chocolate chip cookie. When I was a kid, I would sit and stare at them, willing that shit not to happen to me. Now every time I look in the fucking mirror, I have 19 new goddamn spots, and they're always the jagged edge kind that make me think I have skin cancer, but are really just harmless and gross. Ass and vag. That butt mole. It's pretty much all super sexy, large curd cottage cheese back there. Scar that I got from an infected bite wound from a goddamn dude. I seriously had to be on antibiotics for 2 fucking weeks from a human mouth, bro. Insanely large Mons pubis. Total baboon pussy, brown outside, neon pink inside. At this point in the night, it is really fragrant down there. Woo! And hairy. Torso. Waistband skin tag that has nearly been ripped off a dozen times due to comfortable, high-waisted mom jeans. Big red birthmark on lower belly. Hyperpigmented waistband shading. Is there a cute way of saying what that is? Cinnamon roll. Treasure trail, which is apparently not sexy if you're a lady. Stretch marks. Hyperpigmented underboob from years of underwires holding up these jugs. Same dude bit me on the goddamn back, left a mark. I'm like 7 shades of yellow, brown, black up in here. Deep, dark shoulder grooves because these tits ain't playing. There's hair on them. My armpits are pretty dark. Good thing they're covered in silky tendrils. Arms. Stretch marks is getting redundant, eh? Gigantic, horrid mole that is just barf. Right arm has a cluster of red moles that look like flea bites. Dark elbows covered in chicken skin. Crescent moon-shaped birthmark. pale, raised scar from when I threw myself down a flight of stairs at age 6 as protest against accompanying my mother to the grocery store. Neck, face, head. My neck is crazy hyperpigmented. It's basically every shade in the Pantone African American skin collection, from Smokey Robinson to Amistad. So many moles, goodness. Teenage girl acne, dry patches, oily patches, blackhead city around the nose. I'm still missing that damn tooth. I need braces, but I'm old, so fuck it. Itchy, scaly scalp that needs my constant attention. Sometimes my one eye gets lazy. Waxy ears, the waxiest. More moles, seriously. This dumb hair, which OMG is going gray so fast. Chin whiskers. Is that a hint of a mustache? Meat beard. I have dimples, though. 2 of them. So doesn't that sort of cancel out all this bad stuff? No. Not even the greenish birthmark on my ass cheek that I missed during the initial analysis of this disgusting pre-corpse? Shit. And those scratchy elbows I left out on purpose? Fine, then. Fuck it. Love me or don't, high five. Spending the night is the worst because poop. Can I shit in this dude's crib? Like, really shit in this dude's actual toilet and shit? I mean, because last night at dinner, I ate 10 ounces of medium rare steak and some oozing, cheesy, au gratin-y mashed potato thing, and I couldn't resist buttering the shit out of that cornbread. And I'm pretty sure the grilled asparagus had hollandaise on it, and confident women order dessert, right? To prove how progressive we are? Because we don't want to sit there idly poking at a side salad, pretending not to be starving half to death? So I ate that entire molten chocolate, flourless salted caramel tower, and now it is morning, and my stomach is hot, slash churning, slash gurgly, and I'm pretty sure these walls are so thin that he will hear all the disgusting grunting I'm about to do, getting all that sludge out of my body. And I should have just taken a cab and gone the fuck home. Why am I so dumb? Morning. It's just so motherfucking bright. Whatever sexiness I feel at 2 a.m., shrouded in darkness, cloaked in mystery, is completely erased by the harsh light of the sun. In daylight, you can see my little pencil eraser nipples and that giant red tomato splotch birthmark on my lower belly. My chin whiskers are out. Can he see that shit? How much pore minimizing, light reflecting, wrinkle hiding makeup did I smear on this light colored pillowcase? Does that long hair belong to me? Did this asshole fuck someone else in the same gritty sheets I just pretended to be asleep in? Last Thanksgiving, I woke up in the bed of a dude I thought I knew better than I actually did. He didn't have blinds or curtains, and the sun was excruciatingly bright, white hot and unforgiving. In the middle of the night, I'd burned my tits on the sizzling radiator, trying to sneak to the bathroom, because I didn't want to fart next to him in bed and use my asshole as an alarm clock. And I glanced down to see an angry red burn streaked down the side of my boob. Dude woke up and rolled awkwardly on top of me, and I hate banging in the morning, but shit. It was fucking Thanksgiving, for Christ's sake. I was feeling charitable. Anyway, we're doing it missionary style, in honor of the pilgrims, and I looked up and saw 2 alarming things. 1, his eyes were rolling back into his head, which looked so ridiculously insane. And 2, there appeared to be a rather large clump of lady hair trapped in his beard, and it was dangling precariously close to my face. Sex in the morning. Dude, I know it's a thing. A supposedly hot thing. And if we lived in a movie, it would probably be a very sexy thing that I enjoy doing with my perfectly elastic body and my vagina that smells like a new car. But in real life, I am so gross at 8 o'clock in the morning, and everything in the room is just so visible. I start wondering if homeboy has ever heard of a dust rag or a Swiffer cloth, or how many technical manuals one person can own, why this motherfucker still has a road atlas, or if there's anything edible in his fridge. Okay, so I'm underneath this sweaty, grunting dude watching a tangled snarl of some broad snatched out weave move closer to my mouth with every thrust. I just kept counting turkeys jumping over a fence, right? And scooting my head out of the way, thinking that if I had just gone home, this wouldn't be happening to me right now. Is it too much to ask a man to take a lint roller to his sheets at the very least? If you aren't going to wash them, is it too much to ask for you to gently shake them out on the back porch? My toothbrush is not here. And my mouth tastes like a butt. My hair stuff isn't here either. Why does this dude only have bars of Dial soap? Can I use that shit without my face cracking into a million pieces? Why doesn't he have Vaseline? Or Listerine? If I could just find a bottle of mouthwash under the sink, maybe I could swish with that and use a Q-tip to scrape some of the plaque off my teeth before I have to breathe on him again. That is the worst part of the walk of shame, the tasting of last night's dinner and some dude's dirty balls on my breath while standing awkwardly in line at Starbucks, tongue fiddling with the grime on my teeth. And my hair needs a little water and a little leave-in. Otherwise, it looks like scattered tumbleweeds atop my head, and all that glancing around the bus, trying to assess whether anyone has noticed, is downright exhausting. This is the kind of stupid worry that keeps me awake at night. I am an idiot. Rewearing gross panties with the hardened crotch. You know, because you got super wet while you were making out in the cab on the way home, and instead of thinking, I should probably rinse these soiled underpants in the sink and lay them on a towel on the radiator, when you drunkenly stumbled into his place, your brain was all, cock, fuck, bite me right there, stick your fingers inside me, ouch, I can't get my goddamn shit.